And was that a live version of the song they released?
Mm-hmm. They did the song, but they didn't have horns in it. They did it almost identical to what we did. It sounds a little bit different, but it's basically the same song, and that was their first single. And it was released on an English LP that wasn't released here in the States.
A lot of bands seem to have issues with record companies and publishing companies once they have hit songs. Did this happen to your band as well?
Yes, it did. And what I remember is we ended up sharing our publishing rights, our writing rights with the production company that produced it, that put out the record.
Dunwich.
And now Larry's a little more familiar with the players than that, but I recall we were, and this is kind of tricky how they did it. We were supposed to be, it reminds me of that scene in Spinal Tap where the band is trying to find their way up to the stage and they're getting all pumped up and they're, and they finally get up on stage. And who's waiting for us? The crowd is screaming for the band to start. We're running a little late. And the manager, our manager, Bruce, is waiting for us just before we all stepped up and said, you guys got to sign this before you get up there. And we're all looking at the stage and the crowd, and we're not paying any attention to what we're really signing. And everybody goes, yeah, okay, all right, all right. We signed all these papers, and then we went up on stage and played the gig. Well, little did we know, we just signed away half our writer's royalties to the...
We made a mistake.
That's
we made
a big mistake. Whoa. And I've always held Bruce responsible for that because...
Yeah, he should have been looking out for us. Yeah. He didn't do his job. He should have been looking out for us, not them.
And he learned that from other groups that have had this happen to them also. And I guess it still continues on to this day. That's the way.
Well, the story goes: the first batch of songs we gave them, "Evil Woman" and that whole horn thing on our first album, that was published by Yuggoth Music, and that's the thing he's talking about. We signed away. Well, after we came to our senses and had our brains in screwed on right, and we figured out what was going on, the next batch of songs. We split publishing with them, Yuggoth Music / South 40 Tunes, or 40 Tunes. So later on, we got at least 50% of our publishing. Now, this is very standard in the industry. If you look, this happens to a lot of groups. The very first group's batch of songs, you sign your publishing away.
Mainly because people just don't know the
business. They don't know any better. And if it helps you get the deal, yeah.
And the record company will say, we have to try and recoup our production costs because you didn't spend any money putting this together. We
true.
Did.
That's
and
true.
So they took a risk, and so we take a risk, and that's kind of a standard thing.
And who pays for all the road expenses?
That comes out of playing live. That's us paying for all that.
Mm-hmm.
And the money that we spent recording this song was charged... We were supposed to get paid record royalties, but they would keep that and get paid, reimbursed for their risk. Okay, and it's amazing to me that after this long, they haven't been paid back yet because we have never got a penny in record royalties, ever.
And sadly, that seems to be the case with so many bands.
Yes. Now, we could go after this if we wanted to. It would cost us a fortune to find out exactly who made any kind of money. I'm not saying there's a lot of money here. I'm just saying that it's really not worth it, you know, for us to go after that kind of thing.
Okay, so you finish your Mosaic album in 1971. How does that album do?
I don't remember. Larry?
Well, I remember it being sort of a transition thing. We were kind of branching out into other areas in this album, musically speaking. They pulled a few singles off that, King of Rock and Roll and Something in Your Blood, which was probably our last, I remember that being our last single that we released. It did moderately okay. It wasn't as big as Evil Woman. It kept the name out there, and we did play a lot. We were doing a lot of stuff. We were promoting it. I don't think it was as big a hit, so it didn't sell as many.
Dave, did you like being on the road, or was it hard?
I liked it.
Did you guys have a bus or a van or?
We had a 1972 Pontiac Bonneville station wagon.
I flew.
That we leased and we put it.
Well, we did.
We put about 150,000 miles on it in 2 years.
We had a truck for the equipment crew, and then we went in the wagon, and then a lot of times we flew to gigs. So and yeah. We chartered a little twin engine Cessna that we used to fly around in. It was fun. That part was fun.
Flying around.
Yeah.
I
missed approaches.
I liked being on the road initially, but after a while I was trying to focus on the band sound and the music, and I just thought that the road was getting in the way of all that. It just kind of wore me out.
Yeah. What was the biggest event you played for? Do you remember? As far as crowd-wise?
RFK Stadium, wasn't it?
We played at Toronto Pop Festival.
Yeah, Toronto Pop was like 70,000.
You used to have these huge festivals.
Toronto Pop Festival was what year?
69. We played with BS&T and Steppenwolf and those groups.
Chuck Berry.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
how many people were there, roughly?
60, I heard 70,000.
70?
Yeah.
70,000.
I remember we only played three songs, and I was so scared. I was shaking so bad, I couldn't even play anything.
They only gave you three songs to play?
We were low people on the totem pole, so we would play at 1 in the afternoon on Monday or whatever it was.
That's a lot of exposure, even for three tunes.
There was a bunch of good gigs. Our tour with Janis was great. We played the Sky River Festivals in Washington. I mean, there was a lot of
The Washington gig was great because we got to meet the Allman Brothers.
Midway Stadium.
Who played after 50, us.
50,000 at that.
And they were awful nice guys.
They were great, yeah.
And the band we had the most fun with was Blues Image.
Yeah,
we played about six gigs in a row with them in Texas.
Where were they from?
They're from Florida.
Florida.
Yeah. And we played a lot in Florida.
Ride, Captain,
and Texas.
Ride.
And we played in Texas and Florida quite often. In New York. And
We didn't get airplay in L.A. much.
No, L.A., yeah. We played there. We played
in New York, none.
Yeah, we played a prison in L.A. one time.
A prison?
Well, Chino, we played a number of prisons.
Chino.
We played Chino.
How did you get on the prison circuit?
You know,
that was with the Coasters. Yeah. Charlie Brown.
Our management company wanted to promote the record, and they had us all these. Why they put us in a prison, I'll never know.
Hey, that wasn't the only. We played a number of prisons.
Stillwater.
One of which was St. Cloud and Stillwater, and I knew my neighbor who was in there serving 2 years. And he asked me if I had any illegal drugs when I came in. And I said, that's why you're in here and I'm not.
the first thing we played was the Juvenile, Lionel Lakes,
and then you worked your way up.
They asked us
to their way up to the
well,
top.
It was kind of a good.
If
we were
come
trying
and
to
play.
Be good, good.
And we thought, okay,
citizens,
we'll be nice.
You know?
And then St. Cloud Prison heard about that, so they asked us.
And we played Stillwater, and we were just trying to be good citizens.
You could have gone on the road with Johnny Cash.
Well, we could have. Yeah.
I'll tell you, going through those double gates at the prison is a pretty scary feeling.
Yeah,
and they were all asking us to hide in the crates when we left.
And the Coasters, when we played in Chino, that's a tough prison. And the Coasters' bass player wasn't there, and I ended up playing the gig with them because I knew all their stuff, and they needed a bass player. So
I want to hear more about this Janis Joplin tour. Where were those dates?
Well, it was just a short week tour. We were at
Madison, Wisconsin was one. Was
we played, Chicago. Played Madison and Chicago
and Minneapolis
Theater.
Armory.
Yeah. And
I think it was three or four nights.
Yeah.
What was your impression of Janis Joplin?
I liked her.
She kicked butt.
I didn't like her before that, but I liked her after that.
She liked our drummer a whole lot.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, she did.
Danny?
She sent a guy down for him.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was she...
And he declined.
Was she sort of a party girl?
Well, the first time I saw her, we were playing at the Armory, and she was standing right next to me with that bottle of Southern Comfort, and it was half gone. So you could say she was half in the bag. But I'll tell you what, that woman controlled everything that was going on when she was on stage.
She knew what she was doing. She was really good.
Yeah, the background group was Full Tilt Boogie, and they were actually pretty good. And so it wasn't the old Big Brother and the Holding Company type songs.
They had a song called Cry Out. Cry. Mm. It was a big song for her, big band behind her and everything. And she kicked butt. She was good.
Did you ever play with Blue Cheer?
We played in, yeah, we did. We played with them and also Grand Funk in Indiana or Illinois or Ohio somewhere back there. I remember that.
Okay, so Mosaic's out, and then we're into 1972 with Best of Crow. And that's also on Amaret, correct?
Yeah, well, you know how that works. When our record deal came to an end, that was their way of cashing in. They put that out themselves. We had nothing to do with that. They just redid songs, put another batch of songs we had already recorded out. We were going to do, before that, though, we were going to do a fourth album. And we had recorded a number of tunes, and we had a single called Mobile Blues that we were going to release.
Right.
But that's when things kind of hit the fan, and Dave wanted to pull the plug on the whole deal because his family was growing and he wanted to stay home. That was basically the reason for that. And we, there's some other stuff involved. We had some offers that we were trying to get that were denied us.
And our music was going in a real different direction from the original sound of the Crow Band. And we had all these different forces guiding the group. Dave had his family.
Dave quit the band, and then we had Mick Stanhope as the singer for a while.
We had another singer come in, but it was never the same group.
You didn't recall.
But we traveled around, I think, for another year with Mickey, wasn't it?
Yeah, it just wasn't the same.
But then at some point we found out that our manager had not been sending in Social Security payments out of our paychecks.
So we owed the IRS a lot of
stuff.
But luckily, our first drummer, Harry Neals, his father was a real big attorney in town, and he was like hammer and tooth on us. You guys incorporate. You guys incorporate. You guys incorporate. And we did, and we're still a valid South 40 Incorporated, and it still owes the IRS a whole lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But
they can't come after us personally now.
Because you're a corporation.
No, this was Bruce's job. Now, if I played bass like Bruce played manager, we would have sucked from the beginning.
Yeah, anyway, this was Bruce doing this.
This was
the management was one of the outside forces.
Which is our fault. We let this happen. I mean, it comes down to us. We shouldn't have let that happen.
I want to get your opinion on some of the later 60s, early 70s local bands. Joker's Wild, Litter, The Steel Roving, Gypsy.
Gypsy was awesome. I mean, they were a force. They were really good.
When you were in Los Angeles, did you ever see them play it?
Yeah, we used to hang around with them.
We recorded with them.
Yeah, at one point after Crow split up, I got an offer to play for them, which I didn't take.
Did you see him at the Whiskey A Go-Go?
Yeah, we used to hang around with them all the time. There was a sort of a Minnesota mafia out there.
Was TC Atlantic out there, too?
They were out there, and there were some other people that we all know, that we're all acquainted with, that lived out there, and we all hung out together. I mean,
Pat Raines, remember? He went on to back up Al Jarreau, actually.
Yeah, I started working with him, with Joyce Everson, after
he's
this.
He's done well.
He's done well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's got taller power now.
Yeah.
Who, Pat Raines? He does, huh?
No, he's got all kinds of big names.
You talk about Zippy and the Litter of White Lightning guys. I mean, they were awesome too. I mean, there were some really good bands that didn't we have that break. I mean, if you think about it, that break came for us when we beat the Flippers out of that deal.
Yeah,
there was a lot of good bands at the time that had just as good a talent and more so than we did, but we got that one break, and we started writing our own songs, and that was the only difference. But there was the Litter, the Jokers. There was numerous, the Mystics, for crying out loud. Why the they accents. Didn't? They were the baddest group around.
Think of how lucky we were to be, you know, out of all the bands in town, that we were lucky enough to get where we got.
Okay, at some point here, Dick, you wind up on a remake of Everlasting Love by Carl Carlton, the old Robert Knight song. How did that happen?
Well, Bob Monaco was producing him. He was our producer. And after the Crow experience went its way, he was involved in other acts.
He had Rufus, too, at the time.
He had Rufus, and he had a couple other things. And I can't remember if he called me or I hooked up with him or something. Anyway, I ended up going out to L.A., and he told me there was a lot of work out there. He had other groups he was working with and wanted me to play guitar on it, on some sessions. So I did. I went out there. I stayed with Larry. He was living out there at that time and had about a two-week run with some of the group, with Carlton's. We put an album together for Carl Carlton. He ended up having a hit with that remake of Everlasting Love. And they wanted to put an album together. And it was kind of interesting because I got tied up with a lot of local L.A. musicians at that time. And it was a whole lot different than the people I'd been working with, well, especially in the Crow Band. So it was a real neat experience. Took a couple of weeks.
Do you all have a favorite Crow song?
I think the most fun one for me to play is Cottage Cheese.
Cottage Cheese?
Yeah.
Busy Day, Cottage Cheese.
I would have said Busy Day.
Busy Day is a good, yeah, that turned out good. I like Mobile Blues.
Mobile Blues.
Yeah, we never released that, but I like them.
There's a number of things we were alluding to it earlier that we had enough material in the can that hadn't been released yet. We were going to release another record, and we never did. Now we're working on possibly releasing some of that stuff.
That sounds very exciting.
Yeah,
along with some new stuff.
Wow,
along with some new stuff.
Yeah, just to get a little take on that. When we finished our third album, we were actually done contractually, and they wanted to we tried to go with the Doors label.
Elektra Asylum.
And Jack, their producer, was interested in signing us. And we were going to do that. But Kenny Myers, the owner of Amaret, would let us go, but they wouldn't let us take the name with us.
Oh.
So what good is that? You know, I mean, he wanted to keep the name. I'm sure he's going to put some LA guys together, and that would have been Crow after that. So there was no point in us. They weren't interested in taking us on unless we could be Crow.
Okay.
Well, when that didn't happen, that's what really took the wind out of Dave's sails. That's when he decided, I think, that, you know what, my family's getting more and more important, and I'm tired of this kind of stuff. So.
And I think he was starting to lean towards country music.
He, if you remember, Polka was just coming out, a lot of country acts were just coming up. Uh-huh. And Dave he loves country music.
He bought a bar way to hell up in Isabella, Minnesota.
Yeah.
And
he just
ran
focused
that for
on his family.
3 or 4 years and played some country music.
And he played that, and he just got tired of the rat race, basically.
So there could be a new Crow album in the future.
Well, there's going to be one. We're going to re-release a lot of this stuff on Sundays so you can download it instead of just buying CDs, which is obsolete now anyway. But some of the stuff we didn't release, and also some newer stuff, we're trying to see if we can put a package together and put out another CD.
Sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. Guys, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
The preceding interview was recorded at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota on January 30th, 2010, and was produced by Danny Johnson and Tom Campbell.
Candy sweet for my little bag of tricks. Then walk on down the street a while, follow me through my door. I'll lead you by the hand, my love, and take you to the top. By morn you'll say, forget the clock, and do it to me once again.